This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A new year often brings a surge of dating app downloads. There's optimism, there's curiosity, and then the reality of swipes that go nowhere, conversations that disappear, and profiles that aren't quite what they claim to be. And when that keeps happening, it can start to feel a little personal, and none of us like rejection. So how do we handle it when we are rejected? We're chatting with Associate Professor Megan Willis from the Australian Catholic University. Megan, welcome back to Drive.
Thanks for having me.
When people return to the dating apps, especially at the start of a new year, what expectations tend to form before, you know, even that first swipe or that first chat happens?
I guess it's a lot of hope of meeting someone when, you know, if people are downloading it after having had a break or joining for the first time. You know, I think anyone that downloads the dating apps and starts swiping is hoping that they'll find what they're looking for, you know, whether that's casual dating or for many people it's, you know, a long-term relationship. So I think, you know, there's a lot of hope that people come with when they start online dating.
I've been asking the Joy Drive family what's the worst experience that they've had with dating apps, and a lot of racism is coming in, a lot of ageism is coming in, amongst other things. When that happens, when you're rejected and you get that constant repeated rejection happening, how can that impact someone in terms of mood and self-esteem over time?
Yeah, well, we know that repeated rejection can lead to lower mood, and it can also diminish self-esteem. And I guess anyone who's ever been through a breakup of a relationship would know that feeling. But if you think about what's playing out in dating apps, you're just exposed to kind of constant rejection. And, you know, that takes a toll on your mental health, particularly if you're not kind of expecting it. And, you know, often with dating apps, some of that rejection will be when people completely ghost you and just cut off contact without explanation. And we know that ghosting as a form of rejection is, you know, it's experienced worse than kind of explicit forms of rejection, because there's this ambiguity associated with it where people don't know, you know, why they were rejected or what the reason was, which can lead to kind of rumination and a lot more anger and distress.
So if someone's rejecting someone, it's better to just say no outright rather than just behave like a ghost and disappear.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's difficult. Like, if we think about dating apps, there's obviously multiple stages of connection. So you obviously swipe people. So every time someone swipes right, or, you know, depending on the app, it'll be in whichever direction. But every time you reject a post, that's obviously some form of rejection. But once you match with someone and you start talking with them, you know, the level of investment increases as, you know, once you meet someone, there's more investment. So I think, you know, certainly once you've had kind of in-depth conversations with someone or you've met them in person, the kind thing to do is to let them know that you're not interested, to, you know, reduce the likelihood of them feeling distressed for not knowing the reason why they've been rejected.
Megan, I mean, there's a huge volume of what I suppose you could consider potential partners on a dating app. How does that abundance change the way that people judge and also discard each other? How does that impact the behaviour?
Yeah, so what happens when there's such a large volume of people on dating apps is it kind of creates this feeling of unlimited choice. And, you know, I guess that's kind of sold as a plus of dating apps because there's so many people there. But when you have so much choice, what happens is that people become much more selective and they become more likely to reject people over time, because it creates this feeling like there's, you know, there can always be something better out there, and it can reduce your kind of confidence and certainty in making a decision. And it, I mean, it applies to kind of anything in life. When we have too many choices, it becomes a lot harder to make a choice. And that's really what's going on in online dating, is that as people, the popularity of dating apps has surged, it seems to have made it actually harder to meet someone and form a genuine connection, because the rejection rates on dating apps are so high. You know, I think some of the data out there suggests, for instance, on Hinge, that of all possible connections that could be formed, only 1 in 800 leads to people exchanging contact details, so kind of progressing the relationship outside of the app. So it kind of tells you, you've got to be doing an awful lot of swiping to really have a chance of, you know, meeting someone in the first instance, let alone finding, you know, a good, genuine connection with someone on there.
Getting lots of messages, experiences like racism, ageism, body shaming and exclusion are being widely reported. John said, racism, I've had people hit me with no Asians. Another one, no Asians. Daniel in Footscray says, Grindr profiles openly saying no Asians. When we get those sorts of messages, what impact does repeated exposure to that kind of behaviour have on the well-being of the recipient of those sorts of messages?
Yeah, I mean, any, whether it's about race or age or attractiveness, any criticisms like that are going to impact a person's self-esteem and make them feel that they're not good enough. That's not an area that I've done a lot of research in, but I just find it appalling that, you know, that people are exposed to that kind of thing.
What, in terms of fake profiles as well, misrepresentation seems to be a common theme. Fake profiles, outdated photos, or even hidden relationship status. Why does discovering this kind of deception tend to, I suppose, linger emotionally a bit longer when you do find out down the track that something isn't quite correct?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you know, if we take the example of if someone finds out that they've been dating someone or that they met on a dating app and they were actually in another relationship, I mean, it triggers a lot of things in a person. So, you know, there'll be anger, embarrassment, self-blame, and it also kind of erodes trust in people. So it can make people feel like they can't trust their own judgment. So I think, you know, I think that's a really, you know, there's a lot of harms associated with dating apps, but, you know, the kind of long-term lingering effects of those experiences can be really quite significant.
At what point, Megan, does, I suppose, the app use tip from being hopeful into emotionally draining, and what signs should we look out for that suggest it's time to step back and take a break from the apps?
I guess, you know, we talk about this phenomenon called mobile dating fatigue. So that's kind of when you're experiencing kind of emotional exhaustion, cynicism, and it's affecting your self-worth. So, I mean, I think, you know, if ever you experience rejection, particularly where you've matched with someone and formed some level of connection, I think it's normal to feel a bit, you know, some negative emotions in response to that. But if it starts kind of consuming your life and it's really affecting your enjoyment of other activities, that's probably when I think you need to think about whether it's time to have a break. Because if you're experiencing rejection repeatedly and it's really affecting you emotionally, that will be the time when it might be worth just having a break and coming back maybe with different expectations around it. Because I think, you know, when people have busy kind of lives outside of dating apps and, you know, they've got their friends and their hobbies and, you know, dating apps are just a little part of their life, then it can make it less likely that these negative experiences on dating apps can really become all-consuming and affect their mental health.
That's really interesting. And given that, like you said, you know, you've got a one in 100 profiles or whatever, or swipes, in order to have even some potential of meeting someone, it's almost like you have to spend a certain amount of your life on there to have a successful match, yet at the same time, really it's healthy for us to not spend that much time on there.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I know personally of people who've, you know, been fortunate enough in one of the first people that they matched with, they ended up, you know, having a great relationship with. But I guess if we're looking at the numbers across everyone, you know, on average, the stats kind of suggest that it does take a lot of swipes to find someone, and that therefore means, you know, it's important to, you know, not let it become consuming and to, you know, set limits around how often and when you use it.
What about this message that's come in from Pete saying, I honestly don't get the big deal about all the isms on dating apps, whether it's ageism, racism, or whatever. Surely everyone has personal preferences as who they want to meet. And if that includes factors such as age, race, build, hair color, or anything else, I feel that's pretty normal and shouldn't be seen as negative. As long as preferences aren't communicated in an offensive manner, I don't think it's a problem. What do you reckon about that, Megan?
Well, I mean, the nature of dating apps is that it's based on first impressions on physical appearance. So I think from my understanding of the messages you were reading out, people were accounting stories where it's being made, you know, they're receiving messages or people are putting on profiles what they don't want. And that's different to having your own preferences. And I think that's, you know, I think it's quite offensive to be messaging someone saying that, those kinds of things. So I think they're different things. I think everyone, you know, is entitled to have their own preferences for what they're looking for in, you know, in a casual or long-term partner. But, you know, being critical of other people because they don't meet their needs is not a nice thing to do, and it certainly isn't nice for someone on the receiving end.
So it's much better just to say, look, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, or something like that, and not necessarily find out why.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Megan, great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was Associate Professor Megan Willis from the ACU.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.